Okay, so can everybody see that reasonably well? There aren't very many slides, actually. So so the title of our session, Towards a Relational Political Ecology, evokes a question to me. If we're moving towards a relational political ecology, what are we moving away from? For was political ecology not relational in its very beginnings, founded on the juxtaposition of two alien worlds? Perhaps then there is a growing sense that the relational synthesis of politics and ecology, once so radical, has been overtaken. Overtaken by, on the one hand, geoscience, which has patiently confirmed that we're in a new geopolitical era, one in which global politics will be shaped by changes in earthly metabolism, and one in which a new geopolitics must deliver us ecology. So indeed, the Anthropocene, if we can briefly suspend our critiques of the monstrous hubris and the inescapable viral proliferation of the term, at least it makes it impossible to deny that all those other non-humans are political actors now. Ecology can no longer pretend to be just ecology. Hence, the many theoretical calls to arms. To pick out a few examples, Gavin Bridge arguing for a move beyond focus on the production of nature towards the ways that the non-human becomes a constitutive element of social and economic life. Paul Robbins has, of course, attempted to walk this talk, identifying territorializing and deterritorializing spatialities in mosquito management. Karen Backer arguing political ecology should incorporate recent insights into the affective and libidinal dimensions of an economic life that is more than human. So such calls, it seems at least to me, seek to enrich or rewrite political ecology's sense of the relational by responding to a range of recent theorizations of nature, materiality, and life. And these perspectives, as we know, hopefully, today, hold that the world is comprised of skillful, embodied, and emotional entanglements between people and non-humans. What, for our purposes today, I'll be calling a more-than-human geography. And this work coalesces around, among other features, a radical sense of immanence, that's to say, it abides in a world without universal explanatory spirit or ultimate authority, be it God, nature, or capital. Nothing but event following event following event, along vectors shaped by, but not reducible to, the material and energetic propensities of organisms and their ecologies. In this way, more than human geography has oriented itself towards what Braun has called inventive life, and to the play of difference as the engine of the earth. In species, and indeed rocks, humans, or economies, are strategic essentialisms, knots of becoming with no given natural essence. And of course, as a corollary, there is a deep suspicion that the human is a pre-given matter of concern. These ontological perspectives beg political questions. How to organize what matter matters without nature as a guide began? If we've never been modern, what moral principles can guide deliberation? However, more than human geography has generally made, I think, quite modest ethical noises in response to these its own epic questions, asking for things like lively biogeographies, convivial wildlife, or co-flourishing. Thus, there have been calls for more than human geography to move into a more overtly politicized register. Jamie Lorimer recently, for example, calling on more focus on the dynamics of neoliberalism in conservation, while Steve Hinchcliffe et al.'s biosecurity project attempted to take a multinatural perspective on bird flu into UK biosecurity policy, with limited success. Castry arguing, of course, for more theoretically informed investigations of why certain bits of nature make for less cooperative commodities than others. So what I want to do in this paper is offer some reflection on the kinds of ethical gestures practiced by more than human geography, with the aim of providing, hopefully, some greater clarity in what political ecology might be to moving towards in rethinking its relationality. And I've chosen ethical gestures mainly because a gesture is something that's not replicable, it's not the same every time. It indicates a direction of travel rather than a certainty of route. and the meaning of the gesture is unstable. So this presentation is a bit of an offshoot of a co-authored review that I've been writing on animal geographies. So work on the technological, the mineral, and the vegetable falls outside our remit. Is that 10 minutes gone or to go?
To go.
To go, okay, good. Since I've already done the intro, that would have been a disaster. We kind of haven't reviewed work on technological, mineral, and vegetable. So a shout out to my co-conspirators, Uli Beisel, who's at Lancaster, and Man Barua at Oxford. The usual disclaimers apply. So any errors in thinking are their fault, not mine. That's a joke, the other way around. So what we've done is, so I've parsed the ethico-political currents or gestures of modern human geography into four. This is the first of four. The table will build as I go through the presentation, which is obviously a shorthand way of thinking. And it includes this reductive table. The solid lines and categories are obviously a useful expediency, not a real division. Normally, when I see one of these tables, something inside me dies quietly. But there you have it. It's quite useful for our purposes today of going broad and shallow rather than specific and deep. And hopefully I'll never use one of these again. Okay, so the first set of the four ethical gestures is revelatory. And this is mainly involved working through empirically the claims of originary relationality and critiquing the work of purification. So for example, epoch or subdisciplinary making book was of course Watmore's 2002 Hybrid Geographies, tracing how animals materially and figuratively shape and contest place and how non-humans have been subject to practices of inclusions and exclusions. Revelatory gestures have been particularly fertile in showing, for example, how colonial projects were more than human ventures in which non-human actors both assisted, subverted, and changed. There's also a rich vein of boundary work, so tracing the nature-culture borderlands and various acts of purification. In Australia, there's a lot of work on this, where the construction and subversion of nature categories has always been more overt in post-colonial places. And of course, there you can think of probably many more examples. But this long-standing, it's been around for quite a long time, ethical gesture gets its heat from performing a kind of magic trick, the trick of revealing relationality, hybridity, and networked complexity. And the problems of performing this trick and this approach are well rehearsed. It's descriptive, not critical. Difference gets dissolved too easily, and in being agnostic, we end up letting go of ways to account for power. Another problem with this gesture, it seems to me, is that it posits that a new ethics is going to flow smoothly and map onto totally the revealed ontology. So we throw open the gates of human society, perhaps adding a prefix or a hyphen or two, and then all is supposed to change. Hence my use of the past tense here, since this gesture, I think, once valuable, has ossified. So the second is a dispersed ethics of encounter. This can be represented by the work of Jane Bennett and Donna Haraway. So for Bennett, the vibrancy of matter can prompt an affective reaction which might make us care about the more than human. And crucially for her, we can cultivate this quiet receptivity ourselves. Haraway's, and this is where this, I just feel terrible at putting Haraway in a box, is sacrilegious. But that's where I think I'm putting her in this box more because that's the standard mode in which her companion species work has been taken up. But her work is much more creaturely and convincing, I think, than Bennett, and it broadens her ideas out. And we're implored by her to be curious, as she puts it, to know something more about the world at the end of the day than we did at the start. And yes, we're implored to live fully in our knots of relating. But for Haraway, the key difference is that ethics doesn't flow entirely smoothly from these encounters. Hence her emphasis on killing well, since we all live within mortal ecologies of beings, living in and through the use of one another's bodies. we don't get a pass on killing in this world, we have to face it fully. And she also implores us to do things like develop ways of sharing suffering, putting the story of a caretaker of experimental mosquitoes who offers the insects his arms to feed it his blood as a gesture of sharing suffering for human health. And Hugh Raffles further exemplifies this idea of encounter. So the many layers of wonder theory and tales in his Insectopedia tell us about multiple kinds of humans and insects interacting obsessively, furtively, aggressively, and lovingly. So Raffles signals that there's something more going on than just relation in encounter, and I'll return to this in mode 4. But Bennett is, of course, slightly wise to this more than just a relation. Her book, Vibrant Matter, is an attempt to hold on to a sense in which vitality both emerges from relations, but also exceeds the event of that emergence. And she accounts for this more than relational character of matter by describing open holes, whose members never melt into a collective body, but instead maintain an energy potentially at odds with that assemblage. And ethically, this sense of both relation and more than relation matters because, as Catherine Yusof puts it, it makes ethics contagious. Contagious meaning, of course, that new coexistent forms of life may emerge from any encounter, but the results aren't predictable. So that's two, a distributed ethic of encounter. Three is, I don't really know what to call it, interference. And perhaps the clearest, or at least we can say the most persistent, because it's certainly not clear, example of this third ethical gesture is Bruno Latour's ongoing attempt to formulate a new kind of multinatural democracy. So Latour's Parliament of Things attempts to replace the old certainties of nature and of political representation. So for Latour, the question of who counts or who are the people is one that has to be negotiated. It's not a given starting point. And his parliament isn't simply about taking the facts and then adjudicating politics or value, but about attracting, receiving, and arranging hierarchically a range of appellant entities, certainly who will not all be human. And some of these entities are admitted, their cause endorsed, their world composed around their desires, others are excluded for the time being, their case to be reconsidered at some point in the future. And Latour, of course, offers no general principles to judge this process, to arbitrate between good and bad representations in the parliament, which is not really about politics, but about cosmopolitics, a sort of never-ending experimental metaphysics that composes the world. Small wonder, given this high level of abstraction, that Noel Castree calls Latour's ideas as exciting and madcap as cold fusion. Nevertheless, there are a few more grounded studies to highlight its potential. So I'm thinking of Steve Hinchliffe here, particularly in his work on voles, red starts, and urban nature. And he's taken issue with the way that nature conservation is concerned with revealing presence to inform its representations. Hinchliffe argues that conservation should be more about interfering in the politics of processes of coming into presence. So politics for Hinchliffe and other thinkers like Moll and Latour becomes a matter of interfering with or calibrating the patterns of who, what, be it transgenic bees, H5N1, chemical-resistant mosquitoes, who, what, and how they can take their place in any parliament. And then the final one is a promissory ethic. So each of the first three in their own particular ways tend to privilege presence. So for example, since its publication, there's been something of a backlash against the throbbing, evanescent, pulsating economy of life at the centre of Bennett's new materialism. What, for instance, people have asked, of inert materials not open to ontological politics, like rocks just sitting there, hanging out in the world? What are we to make of those absent others, quietly dying in dark corners of the earth? What about the non-corporeal, the spectral, and the non-relational? So for Timothy Morton, whose example, I think, highlights this approach. When we encounter vibrant matter, we don't really meet it. Rather, we encounter a strangeness behind that meeting, a sense that we can never fully know the thing we meet. So he draws on Darwin and biosemiotics, arguing that camouflage, deception, and disguise are the stocks of life. such that when we meet, we may not actually be meeting. So he wants an ethical ecology that includes friction, inertness, and passivity, as well as life and connection. So he wants more negativity. He wants sad pars to argue for depression, melancholia, and passivity. And this dark ecology, as he styles it, allows us to pay attention to more than matter's positive vitality. It allows us to pay attention to what might be absent and to whatever might lurk beyond the sensible or the relation. So a new ethics in this fourth area is beginning to emerge in biophilosophy, in anthropology, in environmental humanities, that attempts to deal with what lies beyond antecedent in time or space to the encounter, to hold open a zone of indiscernibility or unknowability, perhaps not questions of ontology, but of specters and absences. So what I kind of tried to do in this table is open up the question of what kind of relational that political ecology might want to move towards. And if I've achieved anything, it's hopefully to have shown that there lurks considerable difference in thinking about what a relation might do ethically. Yet each of these four gestures is, in Latour's terms, secular, that it does not rely on any final arbiter, nature, God, justice, nor on any preformed collective, and it remains context specific. Which is in contrast, I think, to much political ecology, which remains by and large committed to ideas of justice, such as rectifying unequal access to resource, realizing rights. Justice, however, being rooted in universal humanist ideals, is not compatible with most of these more than human ethics. It's not to say that the hard-won gains that have come from using normative certainties should, of course, be shrugged off lightly, but if political ecology is to move towards a new relationality, then I would argue that we need greater clarity on the kind of ethico-political gestures this would enable.